in to play a few tracks across this month as part of New Zealand Music Month. Anika Moore captured hearts and minds with her crystal clear voice, down-to-earth manner, whip-smart humour and knack for writing catchy, heartfelt pop songs, writes Audio Culture. Moore started entering the RockQuest songwriting lyrics competition and won every year she entered. And in 1998, she enters as a solo act, winning the Most Promising Female Musician Award and Youthful. This track here was included in a compilation album of the finalists. So apparently it goes, the boss of Warner NZ heard it, loved it, and a demo found its way to the head of Atlantic Records. Anika Moore travels to New York, performed her songs for him, and was signed on the spot, and returned in April of 2000 for 6 months to record her debut album, Thinking Room. And the album was a massive hit here, but it didn't take off in the US. And of course, Anika Moore has had a considerable career since in broadcasting, music for children, and many other things. Formidable talent, hey?
I love her. She's a parent at my school, so.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, very lucky to have her. And she's a bit cool lately. Like, she's on this, you know, real health buzz. She's given up drinking and has been a real advocate for people being sober, which has had a real impact. And she's been running, which I'm less a fan of, but she's got other people running, which is cool, I suppose.
I thought you were running.
No, terrible. I tried to like it, just absolutely hated her. Yeah, but as a public health initiative, I very much support her, supporting that. Yeah, she's really cool.
And a reminder, I think the story also went that Anika wanted to write music on her own terms. And
sovereignty.
Yeah, and Raven sort of taking the US route where you have sort of maybe songwriters around you, you know, wanting to push you in certain areas. But quite an extraordinary talent, huh?
Yeah, and didn't her songs, like, wind up on American in American movies?
Certainly did. Certainly did.
And you couldn't make her anything other than what she... Like, she's not someone to, like, turn into something. Like, she just kind of is what it is.
Yeah, no, totally. I'm a big fan of that album. So there you go, New Zealand Music Month, celebrating music of Anika Moore there. Really big response to Flashing. They are coming through thick and fast, so I'll try and tuck in a few of those.
Are they texting while driving? Are they texting from the road?
I don't know. Oh, gosh, amazing who listens in. Tim says, not totally true about Anika. I signed when I was judging that RockQuest final. Wow, good to hear you, Tim. To this now, 5:25, the panel, RNZ National. Building consent has been granted for the Southland Charity Hospital that Blair Vining campaigned for before his death. As you may recall, Vining rallied Kiwis and petitioned the government for a specialist cancer agency in the month before he died of cancer in October of 2019. The charity hospital is about being able to continue with Blair's vision of ensuring equitable healthcare access for all people here, there in the southern region, excuse me. The site, which was the former Clifton Club Inn in Invercargill, was gifted by the Invercargill Licensing Trust. And the goal of the Southland Charity Hospital will be to provide healthcare for those living in the southern DHB zone who would otherwise be unable to access treatment through the private or public health systems. And with us this afternoon is Melissa Vining. Kia ora, Melissa.
Kia ora.
So you have the consent, and I think you described it as an epic milestone in the charity hospital vision.
It absolutely is, and it definitely felt like Blair was shining down on us to get that through in time for his birthday.
Which is it today?
It's today, yeah. So the girls and I went down to see construction starting at the hospital, and it just feels so exciting to know that we're delivering through on his vision, and we'll soon be able to be helping people in the Otago and Southland region.
This has been a really real labour of love, hasn't it? I mean, we had you on, Melissa, on the program when you actually got the building. But I understand that the last 18 months has been full of many highs, but also quite a few lows. How so? Tell us about it.
Probably way more highs than lows. Obviously, losing Blair a few weeks after starting the project was a massive low, but every day we are just reminded of how fortunate we are to live in such a giving community. People have just given so big financially. People have volunteered their services. Boyd Wilson, who got the building consent done for us, he signed up just to help us choose a building, and here he is 18 months later delivering the building consent for us. The trade people that are lining up to come and help us do the building, and all the money we save from tradespeople giving their time goes directly to patient care. And doctors and nurses have already been helping. We entered into an arrangement with a really generous private hospital who have allowed our volunteers to start working with patients already. So many people doing so many things. So the highs are definitely seeing the generosity of others.
I've got to say, before I jump in with the panel, Melissa, this story is as much about the coming together of a community as anything else. I've read a little bit about it, but the way that your community has rallied around this project is nothing short of extraordinary, huh?
Yeah, that's the best way to describe it. And, you know, it's not just even South and Otago. Like, people from Auckland, Northland, Gisborne, Wellington have been buying bricks, supporting us and sending us love. And, yeah, we just can't thank everybody enough for making this vision possible.
Yeah.
I just, kia ora Melissa, and just wanted to mihi te you and your whānau. I think not just this hospital, but also the impact that you had getting the cancer agency, you know, pushing for that to be established. Really important and significant impact that you've had. I think it's really cool, and I think the community aspect is great as well. I'm just sorry that you've had to do it. I don't, if as a health professional, I think, yeah, the deficit in Southland around, you know, bowel cancer and bowel cancer screening and treatment is a massive stain on the country and the health system in general. So, yeah, it's a cool outcome, but I think, you know, it would have been nice had it not been necessary.
Melissa?
Yeah, and I think it's really nice to hear that people understand that point. I feel like the politicians should really feel ashamed of themselves that our community has had to do this.
Raben Cann, your thoughts, questions?
Yeah, no, that was my first thought, not knowing much about this, is why was there this gap that needed all these, you know, all the goodwill of these people to fill it?
Yeah, so basically I think there's a combination of reasons, and obviously everyone's aware that the health system, the publicly funded health system, is failing many people around New Zealand, but specifically in the southern region we've got the highest rates of colorectal cancer, we've got the latest stage of people being diagnosed, and we had the highest decline rate of colonoscopy, so people couldn't actually find out whether they had cancer or not until it was too late. So it's no reflection of the clinicians. It's failed funding and failed holding management to account.
I'm quoting you. The sad reality is that every day people throughout Southland and Otago are being failed by our health system. You said, while you're here, do you have any views on the proposed health reforms? I mean, very significant they were seen as, his health reforms, and do you think it will end the quote-unquote postcode lottery?
I'm a really optimistic person, so I really hope that something will end the postcode lottery and the other inequities in the system. I'm personally in favour of centralisation, but I was sad to hear that the money, there's been no money allocated to more doctors or nurses, and it's all being talked about just in terms of bureaucratic positions. And we've got nurses and doctors courageously speaking out about the pressures that they're under and their workload, and to not hear how they're going to actually fund those shortages at the front line. So we often hear about the harm being caused to patients, like what happened to Blair, but, you know, doctors and nurses and radiologists, they're all under pressure and not being well looked after, and it's affecting their well-being. So, yeah, whilst I'm supportive of not having 20 different CEOs all getting paid to do all different things and deliver different types of care, I do feel concerned that there was no commitment to those frontline workers.
Yeah, no, I'd just like to support that as well. And I think the, you know, pay freeze, which is no longer a pay freeze conversation that's happened this week, has really reflected that. You know, I went back to work. I work at Middlemore Hospital the day after that, and everyone was just really despondent, I think. Particularly we've got such a shortage of nurses across the country, and you know, being called a healthcare hero one day and then being said you're not going to have any pay increase for 3 years, if you're lucky, was a real kick in the guts. And, you know, it really affects the care that our patients get, because the thing that I've noticed, I've only been a doctor for 4 months now, but the thing that patients say to me, or that the patient's families appreciate the most, is your kindness and taking time. They assume that you've got good clinical knowledge as a baseline, but they want you to have the time to sit down and explain things and to care about them. And the moral injury for our healthcare practitioners, who are so stretched that they can't give that to their patients, even though they want to, is just another compounding, you know, difficulty in a difficult job already.
Melissa, I was going to ask you, I mean, do you sometimes, do you just think to yourself, goodness gracious, I'm actually starting a hospital. I'm actually, you know, I mean, it's, who says that? Who gets to say that? I mean, born out of such tragic circumstances, Melissa, I understand, but you're starting a hospital.
Yeah, when Blair said to me, it was a few weeks before he died and he was in Dunedin Hospital, and he said, you know, we could see things weren't changing at the front line, and he said, you're just going to have to build your own hospital, babe. And I, you know, I laughed hysterically because I was like, oh, yeah, that's really funny. Like, are you kidding me? I don't know anything about building a hospital. But being down there today and seeing what our country and particularly our community has achieved, I just feel so proud of what they've done. Like I said, I wish they didn't have to do it. But, yeah, people have seen a problem and they've jumped in and helped. And many of the people helping will never benefit from it. So it just shows such goodness in people, and also such desperation when they see people dying unnecessarily down here.
Good on you, Melissa. Thanks very much for being with us on the panel.
Hey, thanks for your time, guys.
Blair Vining would have been 41 today. So you can check out that online if you do want to sort of go and help there, the Southland Charity Hospital there. They have a website and they have a board. Interesting, you can look at the governance, and it's actually quite well structured and set up, so you can have a look at what they plan to do and their goals and their aims there. Worth checking out. Melissa Vining there. Wallace, I feel you need to know that Nneka Moore is actually a baby whisperer, witchy magician. Her songs and bubbas are the absolute best. Anna, mother, not driving Coromandel.
She is, actually. She is also another talent. It's disgusting how many things she's good at.
Yeah. Wallace, I'm 81, still driving well, but I hate those awful halogen lights on modern cars in my eyes, so I flash my light onto full at them. Very good. 15 to 5, the panel. Emma Espiner and Raven Cam with me this afternoon. Now, Commerce and Consumer Affairs Minister David Clark has introduced legislation aimed at reducing merchant service fees. Now, these are the fees banks charge businesses when customers use a credit or debit card to pay. These fees are unregulated, and according to the minister, they can add significant overheads for retailers who often pass these costs on to consumers. For more on this, I'm joined by Consumer NZ Head of Research, Jessica Wilson. Kia ora, Jessica.
Kia ora, Wallace.
Why do these fees exist in the first place? Explain it for us.
Well, look, in theory, they are supposed to cover the costs of administering this method of payment. However, the lack of any cap on the charges means they've been much higher than they should be, suggesting they've actually been a nice little earner, at least for some. Some of the revenue that is earned from the fees is also used to fund credit card reward schemes, which banks have been keen to advertise as a perk of paying by card. However, for most customers, reward schemes don't really provide great value. They only really benefit big spenders, low spenders, and anyone with debt on their cards doesn't benefit, so they're effectively subsidising the rewards that high spenders.
But they say this is going to have a significant impact on loyalty schemes. And what about those who absolutely love their tried and trusted loyalty program?
Well, look, when you look at the cost versus benefit of the proposal overall, any detriment to card earners is probably outweighed by the significant benefits to all consumers in paying less. The estimated benefits of the proposal are around $74 million a year to retailers. So that's quite a bit of a saving. We'd expect those savings to be passed on to consumers at the till. And I think that's a much bigger benefit than the loyalty points that you earn, which for most of us aren't really much benefit anyway.
All right. Well, let's go around the panel. Who has a loyalty program? Where's your do you have a wallet here, Emma?
Oh my
god,
I've got 6 years of uni. I'm like so far in debt. It's not funny. What a cynical way to spin it. You know, oh, we'll take away your loyalty programs for this arbitrary thing that we've been doing that we've been absolutely creaming it off in a pandemic. So this was a barrier to people implementing PayWave retailers during a pandemic, and now they're going to take away your loyalty schemes. I mean, come on,
Jessica.
Oh, look, if banks want to operate these loyalty schemes, they're going to have to find another way of funding them. Essentially, all consumers have been subsidising the high spenders anyway, who benefit from the card schemes. Most of us really don't, because we just don't have that spending on our cards to earn the big rewards. So it's low-income earners subsidising high-income earners.
Raben?
Yeah, it's a bit of a... I mean, I don't want to say scam, but saying, calling it loyalty. Someone else said that, don't sue me. But just even calling it a loyalty program, it's kind of a hostage situation, really. And even those, like when you had to use a credit card and they do that thing where they've sort of handwritten, it'll cost you 2.3% to use a credit card. And then they just know you can't work that out. So it's all part of they're preying on the mathematically challenged, and this is, you know, it's good to rein them in. And
you've never been part of a loyalty program, Raben? Come on.
No, I've had to be because I'm sucked in, but I'm smart. You know, I'm savvy enough. I've lived enough. I've seen enough to realise that when they say you'll get 4 cents a litre off, someone else has added 4 cents per litre on somewhere.
Is that, hey, Jessica, by the way, I understand the fees here are much higher than in Australia.
That is right. Yes, Australia has already moved to cap these charges, so it's noticed the problem much earlier than us and stepped in to regulate these fees. We're only doing it now. We've been calling for a clampdown on these charges for some time, so it's good it's finally here. We've been a bit slow coming to the party, however.
Okay. Just finally on the PayWave, because that, bringing up Emma's issue, that you do see it, don't you, that people no PayWave here. And once I asked why, because it seems such a sort of no-brainer, and it was the fees associated with it, Jessica. They ran me through the fees and, gosh, they were quite high. Will that change?
That is right. Yeah, well, that is right. For small retailers in particular, the costs of offering this type of payment have just been too high and they haven't been able to do it. The changes here to clamp down on fees should mean it's easier for retailers to offer this type of payment for consumers who want to use PayWave.
Okay. Consumer NZ Head of Research, Jessica Wilson there. Thank you for that. That was a bit of a misnomer, isn't it? There were some early calls in before, actually, hey, come on, contactless payment, it's got to be done. In fact, there was a move to actually... eradicate for a while during the pandemic. It kind of makes sense.
Yeah, but then, you know, our dairy, which is tiny down the road, would, you know, can't afford that.
Can't afford it, yep. Absolutely okay to flash your lights if there are speed cameras, road control, because the speed limits in New Zealand are in general unreasonably low and therefore not really adhered to by anyone. It's our community's way of working with an unworkable system. If you think these are just the words of a speedster, just you try doing the length of New Zealand with your cruise control set at the speed limits and watch what happens with the traffic around you. So people are really getting into that...
Strong community vibe on the show today. Eh?
That's right. Yeah, they're all gathering around the... The flashlight,
the issues of the day.
The flashlight feel. I totally agree with that lady who just texted in. Has anyone looked at how dangerous these new lights are on modern vehicles? I'm blinded by the brightness. I have often had to slow right down and on one occasion had to pull over because I was so blinded that I could not see. Maybe this is a subject you should seriously be looking into, and I wonder how many accidents have been caused by this, asks Linda. Linda, thank you very much. 8 to 5, the panel. Now, Hastings District residents are being invited to submit their ideas for a short film as part of a project led by the Eastern Screen Alliance. Now, entry is open to any resident with no previous screenwriting credits, and there will be 5 winners. I thought this sounded quite interesting. So for more of this, I'm joined by Campbell McLean, manager of Eastern Screen Alliance. Campbell, kia ora.
Kia ora, thank you for having me on your program.
Good to have you on. Now... what have the writers been asked to do?
Well, this is really an initiative that's been supported by the Hastings District Council Creative Fund and Creative Communities Fund. And writers are invited to submit a one-page synopsis, a story, any story of their own making, and send those ideas into us, and yes, we will then select five. It's not really a prize per se. We will select five of those and try and help them along the way in that writing process.
It's quite cool. I'm reading here, an incubation to get people thinking about whether they would like to be working in the screen industry as a writer. And as part of it, as part of this actually trying to sort of incubate Hawke's Bay as a region of filming or screen development.
Well, funny you say that. Hawke's Bay has a tagline that says, great things grow here. But maybe we've come up with a new one for them that says, great ideas are made here. I think we all have a great story inside of us. A lot of us don't really have that opportunity to write that story down. And, of course, the Eastern Screen Alliance is really trying to promote Hawke's Bay not only as a production hub and as a base for filming, but also to try and encourage new talent, in this case, new writing talent that's out there to show up and send us your ideas.
Wonderful. Raven, well, we've got a script writer here.
How hung up are you on this whole thing about someone being a resident? Like, can someone who's, you know...
Are you pimping for work, Raven?
No, I'm just saying, like, hypothetically, let's say someone had an idea, because you just said everyone's got one in them, and let's say I'm part of a subset of that. But I'm, you know, not a resident of Hawke's Bay at the moment. Is there some encouragement for someone to become a resident of Hawke's Bay in order
A lot of people are moving here. You're welcome to make that move if you'd like.
Right. And is that going to work out as a is that an advantage to, or is that really just
obviously the fund is there to try and assist locals and local communities. It is a community fund, and there are a lot of young people out there. There's a lot of diversification out there that might not normally have this chance to expose their writing talents to a wider audience, and I think it's really more focused on trying to help people within the community.
Is that a no? That kind of a no.
It's a no.
And the way
it's
he said,
that's a kind
the way
no.
He said young people.
You live in Wellington.
Yeah, really
you live in Wellington, yeah. Raven. You live in Wellington.
Yeah. You can't be a non-resident Hawke's Bay person.
Emma, what do you think? It's quite a good initiative, isn't it? Sort of to support talent.
I love it. I love storytelling in any form. I think that's really cool. My only story about the Hawke's Bay is going there for a sort of basic Auckland girls wine trip, and I don't think anyone needs to know anything more about that than the headline suggests. But no, really cool. Cool to hear.
Well, this sounds like there's a story there.
I reckon there is a story there, actually.
Nobody needs to hear anything more about it.
Raven, come on, give us some tips. Campbell's on the line. You're a sitcom writer. You've got young people out there wanting to know what a one-page synopsis with a compelling plot, what must it contain?
To be honest, I don't understand short films. I feel like a short film is it's sort of a subgenre like of a sketch. It's kind of a sort of a surprise reveal somewhere. That's my, you know, the ones I've seen. But a lot of people, I think, okay, if I was going to give advice and having prefaced it by saying I know nothing about this, less is really more with that thing. It's very, I would say zoom in on something and go nuts about it as opposed to have lots of stuff happen.
That's great advice, isn't it, Campbell? You've got a short film. You don't want to make it too complicated, eh? One or two very nicely executed ideas.
Yes, a good strong main character who is out there to achieve a goal. I'll obviously keep it short and simple. Good strong ending. But for all those wannabes out there, don't give up. You know, it's a foot in the door, and who knows what it could lead to. Wellywood.
Absolutely. And then Raven Cairn could apply. nice.
The youthful Raven Cairn.
Hey, that's
very
Campbell.
Passively aggressive sort of way of describing.
All the very best, Campbell.
Oh, no, you're quite on the Anika Moa song.
Thank you.
Am I?
Cameron McLean, the manager of Eastern Screen Alliance there. Don't take any rubbish from Emma here, Raven. You're great.
Yeah, great. I was just, and this is not in any way related to the previous, that really cool co-pupper in the Hawke's Bay. But I'm just reminded, someone sent me a message on Twitter the other day about that, the Hitchens quote. Everybody does have a book in them, but in most cases, that's where it should stay. Not related, but it's just, it's always a good time to quote Hitchens.
Absolutely. Emma Espinner, Raven Cairn. Good luck with the beard, Raven. And meanwhile, we're going to go out on the wonderful Onika Moam. Here we go.